A UFO lands in the desert and there constructs a pyramid, atop which is an eye that watches the shifting sands and plots the construction of a civilization that will turn this land into lush fields. These fields will allow this civilization to grow into an empire that will shape the history of a species that will grow and advance and cause murder and carnage upon itself until someday it rules this planet. Then it will look skyward. It will create vessels that will carry it through space and time to new worlds. New worlds where it will construct pyramids. Pyramids with eyes on them. Eyes that dream. Eyes that dream of a vision. Eyes that attempt to conceive of a sound. Eyes that imagine. The Post Culture Podcast. The Love Letters of Cedric and Emily. Part 1.
My dearest Cedric, I hope you are not offended by my rash impropriety in writing you this missive. I know we shared only a few words during our brief meeting, but I felt then, as I do now, that every syllable was full of meaningful longing for one another. I hope you think me not just a silly girl full of youthful passion when I say that at our first glance there welled within me a deep and resounding love. Nay, but I can think of little else but your face since our first encounter. I sincerely hope that this letter finds you well. It is too much for me to dare that you share my feelings, that my yearning to be close to you is reciprocated. But if you feel even a fleeting sense of pleasure knowing there is one in this world who cares for you as I do, then I will count myself among the happiest women in God's creation. With greatest love, Emily.
Dear Emily, love is not quite the feeling that your letter brought to me, as I'm not exactly sure who you are or how you knew my address. If it is a light pleasure your letter was looking to spring forth in me, you certainly succeeded through the many hours of riotous laughter my friends and I shared while reciting your overwrought prose and comical voices at the local tavern. From your return address, I'm assuming you're one of the dull tarts I met at the Shipley's little party, for upper-crust nitwits so constipated on their own self-importance it causes them to wince as if someone were scraping their colon with a frayed hemp rope every time they bend over. I've been trying to decide which of the dullards you were at the party. Were you the plain-looking wallflower I passed on my way to vomit champagne into a potted ficus, or were you the one with tits? My first inclination would be to say you were the one with a passing resemblance to a bust line, as if you were the wallflower and were expressing such outpourings of emotion over our brief exchange, then you would have to be suffering from a painfully acute form of dementia. However, if you were the one with the relatively copious mammary glands, then I don't think outpourings of love would be filling any letter you wrote me, considering the condition I left you in that evening. Vile gypsy curses upon my family name, or perhaps requests for funds to afford one of Dr. Olregard's little operations, would be the more likely content. I'm therefore to presume that you are the demented flat-chested wallflower I almost vomited on. I would ask you to write to confirm this logical deduction of mine and to give the boys of the tavern another good laugh, but I've decided to embark for Europe to join the Prussian army, and will henceforth be unreachable for much of the remaining decade. Yours truly, Cedric. I'm faced with a choice, a quandary, a decision to be made between two moral paths. My conscience was torn. The old cliché of a devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other played out before me, each side tempting me to its position. The angel says I should have some toast. Just some toast. No need for butter or jam. Do we really need such unhealthy decadence? Why can't we enjoy the simple pleasures? The devil says I should nail my cat to the floor, living, screaming, surrounded in the markings of my master, written in the blood of a rooster, and depicting acts of blessed fornication between priests and their simpering, failed god. The angel says, actually, is toast such a good idea? What if I have a gluten allergy? Maybe that's why I've been so tired lately. You should go in for a checkup soon. Maybe just have some tea. Just peppermint tea. No caffeine in that. And rest is important. The devil says, deep in the hollow woods you will find under the corpse of a child the black fang of undoing that will grant you visions of the barren end times and the beginning of the master's reign over man. You will also find the pelt of the dire wolf and a slender blade through which you will do a master's bidding. The angel says I should buy organic tea. It's not about the flavor, but because of the environmental impact. Yeah, it costs more, but compare that to the impact it has. If you consumed less, affordability would not be as much of a concern. The devil says, laws are the chains of the weak, and the great calling is near, and it is time for you to choose if you will be a butcher or one of the slaughtered. Give yourself to the master's will and choose the souls that will be your slaves in the glorious, bloody hereafter. Also, there is a sale on organic peppermint tea at Trader Joe's. The angel says, why, yes, I remember seeing that. Good catch. The devil says, no problem, I get the flyer. Thus it is decided. The Love Letters of Cedric and Emily, Part 2.
My dearest Cedric, I found your correspondence most delightful and moving. Your wit and intelligence are truly remarkable, though you speak of matters beyond my experiences and make humorous remarks my feeble feminine intellect cannot comprehend. Yet reading any words written by your hands fills me with such joy as I cannot express with mere ink and quill. Your intention to take up a career in soldiery has wrapped my emotions into something of a knot. Your bravery and sense of duty are remarkable and make me feel a great sense of pride for knowing such a fascinating man. Yet the soldier's life is a dangerous one, and I fear for your safe return. Even should God smile upon us and you survive the ordeal, the experience can take its toll. Father was once a soldier, and his time in the service left him with a violent and temperamental nature. I don't think I could bear to see you hardened so, or, heaven forbid, be the victim of some great bodily harm. Father has not been able to sit properly since the Haitian slid a battle axe up his nethers. Yet it is a woman's place to worry. I hope this letter finds you well. My love for you is a deep and glittering pool. With every thought of you, it grows deeper and wider until I fear it may overwhelm me. Your dearest and truest, Emily. P.S. I have included a short piece of verse inspired by my thoughts of you. I know it is the mere scribblings of a fanciful girl, hardly out of childhood, yet it is heartfelt and true.
Emily, I was truly surprised to find your letter waiting for me when I arrived in Paris. In part, this surprise stemmed from the fact that it has been 2 years since our brief encounter, and I had assumed your memories of me had grown as dim as mine of you. However, the greater amount of my surprise stemmed from the fact that I chose my hotel in Paris at random and have been traveling under a false name for some time now, yet apparently your letter has been waiting here for me for a number of weeks. This means you either possess powers of clairvoyance beyond the realm of mere mortals, or the name of the world's greatest letter carrier. I am writing back to you in part to inquire as to how you knew what my present location would be. I derived much humor from how seriously you took my entry into the soldier's life. Perhaps it is your inexperience, but when a man says he is joining the Prussian army, it means he plans to spend a month or so dipping his wick into the vast sea of European prostitution. As an aside, the phrase, a Hessian slid a battle axe up his nethers, has another meaning as well, which I will not corrupt your innocence by divulging, except to say I would highly recommend running your father's utensils over hot coals before using them yourself. I suppose the joke is on me, though, as I found myself a few months after our parting working as a mercenary for a certain German politician in order to pay my debts to a highly persistent Hamburg brothel owner. I and my fellow soldiers were charged with the mission of bringing down a certain Count Gustav, known as the Mad Kraut even among his fellow Prussians. This coming from a race that considers even the act of defecation to be rife with erotic possibility. At first we were filled with trepidation on our approach to the Count's hilltop fortress. However, this fear soon dissipated once we learned that the Count's defenses were manned by a detachment of trained sewer rats. We all had a good laugh and headed off on boldly to deprive the Bavarian nitwit of his cranium. Several hours later, I found myself soaked in the blood of my fallen comrades, nestled into a hollow tree and crying like a schoolgirl. My saving grace had been that, when the rest of my platoon had decided they had retreated to a safe distance, I continued to retreat at a high rate of speed for several hundred more yards. My fellow soldiers' cries of coward were soon cut short by the sound of cannon fire, followed by those bloodthirsty vermin bastards falling upon them at a higher velocity, raining squeaking death on all in their path. Since then, I have been tramping across Europe and parts of North Africa, trying to hide from my creditors, Otto von Bismarck, and a certain enraged female of ample cleavage who should be familiar to us both. The latter seems to be equal to your tenacity in finding my location, though fortunately not to your deductive reasoning. I believe I finally threw her off my trail that night I swam the Rhine, naked as God made me and with my valuables tied securely to my genitalia. I thought of ending this letter by mocking your blithering, half-witted poetry, but as I'm in a more harmonious frame of mind, I will close by merely suggesting you go find a stable boy to rut with until you gain some sense of the world. Get bent, Cedric.
All right, Mr. Lubick. We're about to take you into surgery, so I just wanted to go through some of the details with you before we begin. Nervous? Don't be. It's going to be just fine. We'll have that growth off in a jiffy, and you'll be out of here before you even know we started. Listen, before you go under, mind if I ask you something? That growth. Mind if I keep it? Oh, it's just a little hobby of mine. Well, really more of an art project. You know, you spend so much of your time cutting things off of people or out of people that it feels good to create something new. All that stuff just goes into an incinerator anyway. It seems such a waste to not put it to some good use. You know, I got this one thing. You really have to see it. It's a giant wall mural of Ryu, you know, from Street Fighter? And he's throwing a hadouken. And the whole thing is made out of a burst appendix and a gallbladder, and it's really metal. Like I said, projects like that are a real comfort to me. I know the anesthetic is kicking in, but still, it's nice to talk to someone who seems to have a real interest in therapeutic art. I think that growth of yours would make a great addition to this portrait of my mom I'm making out of malignant tumors and skin aberrations. The coloring is just right for one of her eyes. You know, a lot of people aren't as sympathetic as you to this. They're all, that's morbid, and I'll sue, and stop trying to play God. You can't make people. Oh, yeah. I make people. It's real cool. I mean, it's not like they're alive or anything, but still, people. I mean, yeah, they look weird. I'm working with spare parts. But I see that as a sort of artistic liberation. Why be confined to just the natural human form when there are so many other possibilities available? Two legs, two eyes, one set of genitalia, and always in the same place? How dull! Nature is so often at odds with true aesthetics. You know, I shouldn't be telling you this, but we can do a lot more than just take that growth off. You want new hands? They don't even have to be human. I've been practicing. You want hooves? It's not a problem. I'll just say I want to keep you here overnight for observation. And we'll bring you back down to the OR when things are quiet. And you can walk out of here with hands for feet. And a giant cyclops eye. I got a nurse I work with who is down for this. I gave her a raccoon tail, and she knows how to keep her mouth shut. So, what do you say? Oh. You're going to be like that, then. All right. I'll just take that growth off. Oh. Don't ever touch you? God, I am not a fan of that phrase these days. I could tell you. You're not going to threaten to sue me, are you? Oh. Ah, well. Here. Let me reach over here and... There we go. Nurse, this patient has gone into anaphylactic shock. Get me 10 cc's of adrenaline and prep the OR. Oh, and nurse, bring the hooves.
Scene opens. A dingy basement, lit by a single light. A man in a suit stands looking down at a chair. We cannot yet see who is in the chair. The man speaks.
Ah, I see you're awake. Likely not your most pleasant awakening, I'd imagine. I'd recommend not moving too much. The motion will only make the ropes tighter. Particularly that one around your neck. I'm curious as to how you found me. My subway punch card.
Very clever of you. I knew my love of meatball subs would betray me one day.
Still, you did not press your advantage with the required brutality. You allowed me time, and I do not require much time to turn a situation to my advantage. You ate your Little Caesars hot and ready so quickly you likely didn't taste my minor addition. You have your weaknesses as well. I imagine this is all very disappointing to you. I could tell from the records that I found in your apartment that you were aware of my many victims. At least you know you'll be in good company. Perhaps you wonder as to my motive. Such as why someone would kill an entire Magic the Gathering tournament. Merely victims of convenience, I assure you. Just at the wrong place at the wrong time. I hold no animosity toward them or those who share their beliefs. Maybe you wish to know why I murdered a sweater. Given what your own government does in your name, that would not be so ghastly. Murdering a men's extra-large Argyle sweater? Would it disturb you to know that that sweater was not the first of its sort to die screaming by my blade? And of course, there was the thing that brought you here. Angela. Such a lovely name. Pity that name had to entice my interest. Would it have been better to have killed it entirely, rather than leave every Angela forever called by that mutilated husk, Angie? Your fury must have been incalculable. But now we come to the end of our time together. While the game has been diverting, I have greater plans for the future and cannot afford distractions such as yourself. So, farewell, my friend. May your cowardly god allow us to meet again in the next life. The camera pulls back to reveal the killer approaching a vanilla milkshake tied to a chair, condensation running down the side of its glass like beads of sweat. Fade to black. The Love Letters of Cedric and Emily. Part 3.
My dearest Cedric, my heart can barely express the joy that enveloped me when your letter arrived. I trembled as I read the account of your bravery in the face of such trials. Though your customary modesty refused to acknowledge it as such, your courage makes me swell with pride, and my respect for you grew with each word of your exquisite prose. Needless to say, I yearn for your safe passage home and to feel the loving embrace of your arms once more. Did we embrace? I have dreamt of it so often that I'm having trouble telling my desires from my memories. I fear this may be a growing issue. My one solace in these dark years, separated from my true love, has been my poetry, which has grown in style and complexity. The subject matter, as with most of my waking thoughts and nightly dreams, concerns my love for you and my heartfelt desire for your return. I have included a few examples of my work, though I still feel that even the most skilled lyricist could not devise words into a form that would adequately express my feelings, to say nothing of my own feeble attempts to do so. As always, I hope this letter finds you well. I pray nightly for your safe return and the rejoining of our separated hearts. Yours truly, Emily.
Emily, once again, your ability to mail letters to my exact location has left me with both a respect for your deductive talents and an uncanny fear of your designs for me. Over the last year, I have traveled to lands few white men have seen, pulled by fate and blind luck along a scattered path through places where civilization is mere myth. And yet, when I found myself, through a chain of unforeseeable incidents, finally resting in a remote Mongolian yurt village, I find that a local tavern owner has a letter from you that arrived here about a week prior. To be perfectly honest, you're fortunate I opened your letter at all. I've had a morbid fear of unopened mail since my last run-in with the magician. Yet having spent the last few months in territory marked by its distinct lack of commodal luxury, it's difficult to turn down any offer of soft, pliable paper material. However, the letter itself was more absorbent than absorbing, and I soon found myself sitting in what passed for an outhouse in that disgusting hamlet, trying to decipher the obscure hieroglyphics carved into the privy door while waiting to put your letter to better use. It's only now that I've reached a somewhat better accommodated Asiatic port city that I have the leisure and material to respond, and I'm only doing so out of boredom in this lazy municipality. I note with some interest that your insanity has grown deeper over the years. To my memory, we never embraced or shared any physical contact, though admittedly much of my memory of that time in my life has been obliterated by a brief yet severe addiction to huffing certain industrial solvents commonly used in railway construction. That said, your continued expressions of affection for me have become redundant to the point of absurdity. Your love for me is about as obvious as a swift kick to the scrotum by an angered Clydesdale. Your consistency at least would be comforting if I were not aware that it is the product of an obsessed, fevered, and demon-racked mind. Seek help, Cedric.
From my balcony, I idly listen to the sound of the breeze, and I watch the kids in my neighborhood. In the late afternoons, they conquer the street, their noise a deafening rumble of shouts. They spread like water drops on rain-soaked glass, forming together, atomizing, running off completely. There is sport among the kids in my neighborhood. Games of chance and games of death and games of immutable hierarchies rattling the prisons of their rigidity. These sports are training, preparation, war, but in practice only. The kids in my neighborhood form a society just to revolt from it and start a revolution and form a new society, breaking and reforming civilizations as easily as one would change in and out of a uniform. I cannot see for myself from my vantage point, but I hear dark rumors that the kids in my neighborhood have conquered an adjoining neighborhood, the first self-confident expression of a budding empire. Refugees scatter across the exurban landscape, and tales of petty atrocities spread and metastasize into mythology. There is a trial happening below me, as the kids in my neighborhood prosecute a heretic. The heresies are vaguely defined, the trial a clear sham. the verdict preordained, and I do not know what the punishment is, but I smell wood smoke in the distance. Kids from another neighborhood encroach on the territory of the kids in my neighborhood. They are repulsed by a concentrated show of force and the growing strength of the darkness. Night falls, and the kids from my neighborhood abandon the streets to the visions of the streetlights. I still sit and listen to the breeze and wonder where we go when we are not seen. Assorted thoughts. Possible password security questions. Name of first pet that betrayed you. City your father disappeared in. Your mother's secret coyote name. Killing time. Slaughtering some time. Bringing the battle to time and performing unholy atrocities against time as dictated by my master. If you were standing on the moon and an asteroid destroyed Earth, you would not be able to hear it. You would just watch a planet be obliterated silently. Banned books, circa 2067. Cook and Eat Your Clone. Fuck Agent, The Refuckening. I'm a Pod, You're a Pod, and The Endless Book of Mirrors. Gonna go spray my face with a pressure washer and start life anew in a state of purity. Who the fuck is even talking to you right now? I want to watch giant skeletons fight while they're standing in a fog-shrouded lake, and I vote. I applied for a patent on faces, but was denied. We all have faces, they said, but that's a lie, and also mine are different. They're screaming. Can you jerk off in a sensory deprivation tank? Isn't that basically the internet? A dick pic that is also that video from The Ring.
What a train that I am was in, man. What a
The Love Letters of Cedric and Emily. Part 4.
My dearest Cedric, I write to you with the gravest of news. It seems the entire world conspires to keep us apart, as if our love for one another were so great that it has driven the pillars of civilization mad with jealousy and imbibed them with furious need to destroy what they cannot have. I've been taken away from my family home. To put it more precisely, my family home somehow burned to the foundation, and I was taken away. My unfortunate family was not able to escape the flames, as something seemed to be wrong with their dinner, and they were all dead face down in their corned beef when the roof collapsed. Of course, the blame for all this has been placed at my feet, a point of most vile and pernicious slander. As if losing my family were not enough, I must now endure the horrendous insinuations that I was seen in the village the day before the fire, purchasing kerosene and rat poison. And worst of all, they've taken our children away, and they are our children. Regardless of what that fat, pious judge or those two impostors claiming to be little Ophelia and Cedric Jr.'s true parents might wish to believe. Yet despite my struggles, orphaned and torn from the fruit of our love, locked away in a madhouse, I'm still warmed and kept vibrant by our mutual passion. And it will keep burning, regardless of what the chemical tinctures Dr. Olerigard tries to feed me to douse the flames. Even if I should have to wait until the last moments of my life, I shall remain firm in my belief that we will be together. With love and faith, Emily.
Emily. So they finally locked your poor delusional soul in a loony bin, eh? Probably long overdue. And it seems that randy old abortionist Olerigard now fancies himself an alienist. Well, we are what we make of ourselves. As I'm sure he reads your mail before sending it along to you, I wish to recommend that if he values his life, he may want to remove any sharpened implements, for example, writing tools, from your possession. Nothing like having an ink-soaked quill thrust through your balls to ruin an otherwise pleasant evening. I speak from experience on this point. By the way, may I compliment you for once again managing to get a letter to my exact location, regardless of the fact that I've been out of contact with any form of society for months on end. Somehow, from inside the walls of that, I hope, very well-guarded asylum, you've managed to send the letter that I just found in my trunk. This despite the fact that I am currently crossing the Pacific in a merchant ship, and haven't seen a speck of land in 3 days. And I've checked the inside of this trunk a dozen times today without finding anything until this moment. Reeks of witchcraft, if you ask me, but I'll let it pass for now. To comment on a few points you brought up in your letter, let me say that while I most certainly have a fair-sized brood of bastard progeny scattered over the Lord's creation, I'm fairly certain we never had any children of our own. However, I cannot be entirely sure of this, as my already fractured memory of our time together has now been almost completely obliterated following a head wound from a stray cannon shot during an attempt by some drinking friends and I to raid a French military barracks in Vietnam. As we were armed with little more than rice whiskey, chopsticks, and flatulent drunken courage, we thought the soldiers would have a good laugh at our attempted coup. As it is, they took the assault a little more seriously than we did, with the end result being 3 of us dead and me missing a chunk of skull. I certainly didn't help my recovery by choosing to self-medicate with a bottle of absinthe the first time I was ambulatory. I was found some days later in Saigon, crouching on a statue of the Buddha, holding a loaded firearm and threatening to kill the next tiger serpent that attempted to sell me goat pornography. It was not the proudest moment in my clan's history. The years since this incident have not been kind to me. I lost my left pointer finger in a knife fight with an Arab over what I perceived to be the comical ostentatiousness of his hookah. Later, I lost my right pointer and ring finger while doing a stint of bridge construction in the African colonies. Not that I took up hard labor, mind you. It was just a ploy by an Irish foreman, some British redcoats, and myself to build a series of platforms that would connect the roofs of various taverns in the shantytown we were staying in, so as to avoid being eaten by one of the man-eating lions that surrounded the village and preyed on drunks that strayed too far off course during a night out. We got a little over our heads, though, when we attempted to construct a steel vertical lift bridge with railroad access on top of 2 wooden shacks. The thatched roofs were apparently not up to the task of supporting the 30-ton odds of steel girders we stacked onto them. I'm frankly surprised they lasted as long as they did. Sometime later, when I was captured by white slavers, I bit off both of my thumbs to escape my chains. An unfortunate fight with an Aussie over some comment I made about how his accent made him sound like a bit of rough trade a sailor might fancy cost me my left ring finger, with a subsequent bout of gangrene losing me my left pinky. The Aussie bought me a drink after and called me a good sport, so I hold no grudges. This left me with just my right pinky, which I let a friend shoot off with a derringer as part of a drinking game. I've never claimed to be a great decision maker. The end result of this extended preamble is that after countless years, broke, drunk, friendless, and fingerless, I'm coming home. I'm almost inclined to come visit you in the madhouse. To be frank, the way I look these days, I think the only way I'm going to get a shag is from a demented, lovesick arsonist. Maybe we can do dinner. Bid the children well. Cedric.
Thank you for listening to episode 4 of the Post Culture Podcast, Smashing Our Hearts Together. Our theme for this episode was provided as usual by The Fourth Shift. You can follow them at fourth_shift@twitter.com and also at soundcloud.com/fourthshift. The music used during the Cedric and Emily pieces was Enrico Caruso, Triste Ritorno. You also heard a couple of selections from the Parchment Farm prison song recordings. Right after the villain monologue, you heard Eyes on the Prize by Glitter MC, aka JM. You can follow her at Glitter EMCEE at twitter.com, as well as at soundcloud.com/glittermc. The music used during the Kids in My Neighborhood piece was provided by Sunfilter, SunFilter. You can follow him at twitter.com/sunfilter and at soundcloud.com/sunfilter. Additional voices were provided by my lovely wife. I hope that you enjoyed yourself during the time that you spent listening to this episode. I hope you did not find it a waste. I hope that you don't find anything a waste. Waste nothing. Use everything. Use every moment. Use every second. Use every blink. Exhaust yourself and die happy.